So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes.
Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F-35A.
Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview.
The Wisconsin Democratic Party will host its first online convention Friday. To preview that convention and to talk about the incredibly interesting time in not only Wisconsin politics, but American politics, I'm so grateful that Senator Tammy Baldwin has joined me from Washington, and 2nd District Congressman Mark Pocan. Where are you? Are you in D.C. or in the great state of Cheesehead Land?
I'm in the town of Vermont, Wisconsin right now, so it's all good.
Well, they're both wonderful places. Thank you so much for joining me. Before we get to the convention, let's talk about a 10,000-foot question. There are two major news events, COVID-19 and protests. How have they changed politics in this election year? Senator?
Well, you can't help but watch day after day of really passionate, grieving, and angry group of citizens speaking out and demanding change. And this has been sustained, and this has been largely peaceful. And I don't think it's going away until we see protests moving to progress. It is, I think, a combination of obviously at first watching the murder of George Floyd, but I think that the systemic racism that that exposes has also been exposed by the COVID-19 pandemic. And I would say that partly because of leadership in Wisconsin, where Milwaukee County had decided a year ago that they would proclaim that racism is a public health issue, it was one of the communities that allowed us to see the disproportionate impact on communities of color. And then really understand that the disproportionate impact of the disease is because of so many underlying factors. So we have a moment right now that is sustained and actually, I think, while we're working on substance now, I think it will be very, very influential when the elections come around in August and in November with the presidential election.
Congressman, can the traditional political systems deal with tensions of this level? I assume you were one of the Democrats in the House that sat or kneeled for 8 minutes yesterday in honor of the gentleman killed?
Well, that was leadership doing that in Washington.
Okay. Okay.
But that bill, I am an author, one of the co-authors of, and
yes.
Strongly support what's in there. You know, I think there's two things. One, I mean, just COVID-19 in and of itself has made campaigns different than anything I've experienced in 30 years, right? You're not going to be knocking on people's doors. They may not want you at their door.
Right.
People may be afraid to go and vote. So we want to make sure that people are voting via absentee in ways that are safe, like we saw after our debacle in April. But also, you don't usually have an issue that's so hot that people are having a major conversation in everyone's homes and on the streets. And we now have that around not just addressing racism, but also addressing some of the violence we've seen from police departments. So you take all those issues together, a once in a century pandemic, coupled by an issue that we've for decades not grappled with in this country. And it's gonna be a very different campaign season come November.
Well, a question for both of you. How motivated are Wisconsin Democrats in this election year? Senator, do you wanna go first again?
Sure. Well, I think all voters right now are very motivated. And frankly, I think we're going to see, if we keep on working very hard, enormous participation. And I think especially beyond the Democratic Party itself, I think that a number of others will be joining us. in terms of supporting Vice President Biden's campaign to become our next president, because of the failure of leadership that we're seeing on the part of this president. I think that it's only, the eagerness to participate is only increasing. Whether that's the showing on the streets through demonstrations, or, there's many who would be joining those but are still socially distancing and remaining at home, but figuring out how they can become more active using social media and digital sources. I just wanted to add to what Mark Pocan had to say about sort of campaigning in this new environment. Obviously, as we have become more adept at digital communication and organizing, I think we saw the seeds of this really in 2018, at least on the progressive side of politics, with groups like Indivisible saying, we're really concerned about the direction of our nation, and we're going to start organizing within our communities, often around issues, but ultimately between 2017 and Election Day on 2018, it had shifted from issue organization to electoral organization in ways we'd never seen before. And it explains, why deep red Wisconsin counties in 16 were not nearly as deep red in 18, even if they, didn't swing over. So I think, we're really excited about the Democratic convention in Wisconsin this weekend. But I hope that this reaches a lot more folks who are very ready to join and participate in the elections this fall.
Congressman, a protest in Green Bay made NBC News, and yesterday a protest in Wausau, more than 1,000 people. Democrats more fired up than ever in this election year, sir?
Yeah, Monroe, Wisconsin had almost 100 people protesting as well, which, we don't often see in some of the smaller communities. So absolutely, I think it's a number of things. One, people are still afraid for their family's health because this president has handled the pandemic so incredibly poorly. Small business owners are hurting, and for many of them, the PPP loans have run out, and the Senate Republicans haven't come to the table like the House Democrats did to do a next package to help save those jobs. Too many people are unemployed. We've got the highest numbers in recent memory unemployed in Wisconsin, and they're hurting being unemployed. The farmers aren't getting the same fair share as farmers in other areas as we're trying to buy some of the goods and help distribute them. At the end of the day, a lot of people are hurting in Wisconsin, and it all points to one place. This administration has done an awful job across the board. So I think people are motivated to get out. They are looking for an alternative path that's going to provide them and their families some more certainty. And I think, Joe Biden certainly reminds people of an era that everyone was a lot happier and better off. And into something that Tammy said, I think one difference between 2016 and 2018 was there's this person on the ballot. Her name was, Tammy Baldwin. And quite honestly, Tammy, has defied much of Wisconsin in the political prognosticators. She won by 11 points when everyone else statewide won by 1 point. So clearly, I hope Joe Biden's campaign is listening very closely to Tammy, because Tammy knows how to win in Wisconsin.
Oh, I think you just said she should be on the shortlist for Vice President, Mr. Pocan.
My shortlist is one person, and it's Tammy Baldwin, but she should be on anyone's shortlist, absolutely.
Senator, are you on the shortlist, ma'am?
What I will tell you is what Mark said in the lead up is my sole focus since I was reelected in 18 is making sure that we change the occupant of the White House. And I am so painfully aware of how, and hopefully I'll soon be joyfully aware of what a key role Wisconsin will play in that. The Electoral College math does not work out unless Joe Biden wins Wisconsin. So I reached out to his campaign very early on to just talk about what we saw between 16 and 18 in Wisconsin and offered up as much advice as I could. And I have continued in conversation with the Biden campaign. Anything I can do to help him win Wisconsin, I would happily do.
And it must be an honor to be listed when all the pundits put your name on that list, Senator.
It's not about that. It's about, we've just set forth some of the critical reasons why we need a change. We've had an utter failure of leadership. And I always want to distinguish between, like, this was a problem before coronavirus, BC. It was a problem BC. It is now much more visible with the coronavirus and with the protests in this country. But that tax measure was everything they said it would be, it is not. Whether it's their promise that it would help working people when the vast majority of the tax cuts went to the very wealthy and multinational corporations. They said, well, don't worry about that. It'll trickle down. Well, the big corporations did stock buybacks rather than reinvesting in their workers and their facilities and their training and their communities. And they said it also would pay for itself. And it's hard to make a $2 trillion mathematical error, but indeed they did. This was trade wars that have hurt our farmers and our manufacturers. All of this happened before the coronavirus. And then, we've just been so shocked and horrified. And, you know, Joe Biden is the person to lead us. He was put in charge of the legislation we passed for economic recovery in the last major financial and economic crisis our country had, and it worked. Maybe not as quickly as anyone wanted, but it worked to rebuild our economy. He also has, such great personal empathy, having lived through, personal crisis, personal tragedy, and continued to serve the public every step along the way. He's the leader we need right now.
Okay, I want to ask you, to both of you, give a short preview of your speech to delegates on Friday. Fire them up. What's at stake in this presidential election? Congressman, go first.
Well, I don't know how long Tammy got. We got 90 seconds, so I could give you the whole speech and I'm not going to.
Okay.
We give it a lot of time.
All right.
Because it's a little condensed, but the message really is Wisconsin is so very important. We've got to change who's in the White House. But honestly, it's also making sure we don't have, we have a veto-proof, we don't want a veto-proof majority in the Assembly or Senate. Right now, Governor Evers has done so many good things addressing the COVID crisis and other issues. This is our opportunity to make sure that we don't fall 23,000 votes short this time. And I probably gave more than I needed to because it is a short speech.
Senator, are you really only given are you really only given 90 seconds, ma'am?
That's all I got.
I was given 5 minutes.
Okay, so maybe you want to give us 2 minutes. Okay.
I was going to say, and I submitted a speech that was more than 5 minutes, and I don't know what they might cut. So I might tell you something that I shared that isn't played, but I'll tell you what I said.
Go for it.
First of all, I said, that together in 2018, we showed what Democrats can do when we're organized and we participate. Certainly I said the stakes couldn't be higher and the choice couldn't be clearer for November of this year. And I reminded us, as I did just during this interview, that we do know how to organize during these times. I gave the indivisible argument, but let's say the Women's March. The day after President Trump was inaugurated, some millions of American women and men participated in women's marches. This was often organized by people who had never at least admitted to themselves that they were organizers. we can do this. And then, you know, a call to action. We can get involved today from home, from wherever we are, to be organizing and to be contributing to the buildup to participating in the November election.
Senator, I want to ask you about recent developments. What does it say about President Trump's potential for being reelected when General Kelly, General Mattis, General Powell have recently, and even one of your fellow senators, Senator Lisa Murkowski, says she's struggling. What does that tell you about Mr. Trump's odds of getting reelected?
Well, you know, there's always the, if the election were held today, they would be nil to, but we also know, especially with this president, to expect the unexpected. And so we don't know what's on the horizon. But specifically to your question, I have to say that General Mattis, our former Secretary of Defense under President Trump, who has so painstakingly avoided criticism of his former boss, with the rare exception of sort of explaining why he resigned, and he did resign, by the way, that to have him come out so forcefully with such detail about, well, in particular, I think it was the sight of the president gassing and assaulting peaceful protesters so he could have a photo op in front of St. John's Church, but also threatening the Insurrection Act, threatening to use that. The idea of, you know, in the eyes of this general, of putting U.S. active duty troops on U.S. soil to confront U.S. citizens exercising their First Amendment rights was a step too far, maybe many steps too far. And I'm very grateful to him for deciding that this was a moment that he couldn't be silent. And I suspect we'll see some other major, I think, we heard something from George W. Bush the other day. Yes. So I would not be at all surprised if there's a growing group of folks who say enough is enough.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to respect both your times. Just two more questions. We'll start with Congressman Pocan. Mark, when you see the signs, defund the police, what's that message and what do you support? Do you support that message, Mark?
There's a lot of messages out there right now. The national groups that we're working with, the national civil rights groups, we've been largely working around the House Democratic bill, which is getting rid of chokeholds and no-knock warrants and keeping collection of police officers who are abusing their rights, people's rights. And we have a whole bunch of things that we've worked with them on. So we're putting that forward. Most of the federal funding, it isn't what funds police departments, although we do have some burn grants and things. And we have taken some of that funding and redirected it to other priorities to provide more security for people and provide a better balance, I think, of making sure that everyone's rights are the same and treated the same. So that's really the priority we have. And in some cases, you look at the Minneapolis Police Department, and that was a police department that probably wasn't fixable. You needed to do something major to have something that's in place that'll treat all citizens fairly. So I think it may mean, you know, some different things to different people, but at the end of the day, what it means is the government, which is how police are funded through tax dollars, has to treat everyone with respect and equally. And that's why I've also introduced a bill to have standardized training around the country for police officers, because there is great inconsistencies. You should know what to expect if you're having an encounter with a law enforcement officer, whether it be Georgia or Michigan or Wisconsin or California. It should be the same. You know, a truck driver has to have a common standard for public safety. I think we should do the same with police officers. And I think our bill is a reasonable bill. And I think that between the Senate and the House, hopefully we'll enact some serious reforms.
Senator, to someone who might respond to the defund the police signs by saying,
who do I call if I have a burglar in my home, or I've just been involved in a serious accident and somebody injured? Well, if we defund police, will anyone respond? How would you answer that, ma'am?
When you call 911 because someone's breaking into your home, the police will respond. And that will always be the case. But I want to sort of unpack the concept. Defund the police is a slogan. It's going to be weaponized by the Republicans, et cetera. Yeah. Let us think about what reimagining public safety means. And one part of the Justice and Policing Act that that Congressman Pocan was just talking about is grants to localities to sort of help reimagine what is public safety. We ask and expect a lot of our police that goes beyond the sort of foundations of policing. So give one example. It would not be atypical at all in America to walk into a high school and see more police officers there than you see public health nurses or mental health counselors or guidance counselors for guidance in career and college planning. So in many ways, another example might be how we have criminalized mental illness and addiction, choosing to arrest, try, and incarcerate rather than have the community institutions that would be much better suited to treating somebody in those circumstances and having them have a much more promising outcome as a productive contributing member of our society and law abiding. So I think that those conversations have to happen, and that we have to challenge local communities to reimagine policing and public safety. And I think that, if we get pinned down by slogans that don't unpack that and really look at what we're talking about, we're not going to have the best creative minds coming together to make progress.
Okay. As I said, I want to respect your time. So here's my last question. In the last 2 weeks, no Summerfest, no State Fair, no World Dairy Expo. Realistically, what do you think is going to happen with the DNC in Milwaukee the week of August 17th? All online, all virtual. Senator, please.
I think it will still be a combination of activities hosted in Milwaukee. Remember that there's as much activity around a convention that there is on the convention stage. So the public gets to watch the programming that will be there. If I were to take a educated guess, the roll call of states will probably happen remotely with a group of delegates gathering in iconic places in each state and, telling the tally for the nominating part. We have to do a platform. That's part of what happens there. But I do think that in terms of highlighting and spotlighting Milwaukee and Wisconsin, that there will be a great effort to have smaller in-person events around the convention and during the convention, because we have a story to tell in Wisconsin, and we're very, very anxious to tell it.
Mark, your thoughts, please.
Yeah, much of what Tammy said, I think I would add, I think it's going to be a little bit of a shortened convention as well, okay. Just because of everything. And, it really is important to highlight Wisconsin, not just because Wisconsin is a must-win state for Joe Biden, but Wisconsin is very similar in the issues that Michigan and Pennsylvania and other states that we need to win have. So I'm really glad that we're doing it in Wisconsin. Unfortunately, these conditions have not made it what we all had originally hoped for, but we're still gonna make it a Wisconsin-based Democratic convention, and I'm sure of that.
You see Wisconsin poised to go in the Biden column November 3, then?
Yeah, I really do.
Yes, okay, yeah. That's great. So if Milwaukee's DNC is virtual or online completely,
Do you think Milwaukee should be the first choice for the 2024 convention? Just quickly, Mark?
Well, I would say Madison, but I think all those conversations will happen. Again, this is really unfortunate, and their team is trying to figure out how to handle all this. I think we're going to know a lot more probably in the next month.
Senator, what are your thoughts? DNC convention 2024 in person?
I would love it to be here. But like I said earlier, looking for every opportunity to highlight the unique story that is Wisconsin and Milwaukee during this convention. And certainly I want to have all of the small businesses that were all ready, willing, and able to be a part of the convention activities. I want them to be able to benefit. And so we'll be working on luring new activities there and looking forward also, as you mentioned, to having a return of all the annual activities that we so love in Wisconsin and in Milwaukee.
Right. Well, Wisconsin, I look forward to interviewing you usually at the state convention. We can't do that this year, so thanks so much for this preview interview. I want to thank Senator Tammy Baldwin and Congressman Mark Pocan. Have a good convention and a safe convention. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.